And the guy who knows the position quite well, former quarterback and U Sports. Now he is the play-by-play voice. Also does stuff on TSN 1150 as well as CFL.ca. Marshall Ferguson joins us. And Marshall, you know the quarterback position quite well. So let's break down Dane Evans. And, you know, it's tough having played the position. You think, maybe he'll be good, but you never really know till the guy gets in there when the bullets are flying and D-men are trying to take your head off at every turn. What's impressed you most about Evans, and is there anything that's kind of surprised you? Because I know you do a lot of film breaking down players before a season begins.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me on. I think the thing that's impressed me the most about Dane throughout this year is, like, last year I saw him when he was in training camp, and I'm like, oh, he's better than Manziel. Like, and I don't think he's just better in training camp than Manziel by a little bit. Like, he seemed like he should have been the backup the whole time, but Johnny had the name notoriety and the excitement and the jersey sales going for him, and so he went through that, and he was the same guy. And then he came into training camp this year where he was supposed to be the backup, and he was the same guy. And then Masoli goes down, he becomes a starter, and he's the same guy. That says something to me. Like, there's a lot of people in those three distinctly different situations who would have been three distinctly different people, but he's just very even-keeled. I was talking to Mike Morielli this morning on my morning show in Hamilton, and he used the word grounded, and I think that's a perfect summation of the way that Dane has kind of gone through things. He stepped up to the podium today and was as happy-go-lucky as he was day one of training camp, and it's not that he's oblivious to the pressure and to the moment, but he just really enjoys the moment. Like, there's a game that he played when he was at Tulsa. He went into Oklahoma and played against Baker Mayfield, the Heisman Trophy winner, the number one draft pick, all that stuff. Ho-hum. He completed about 75-80% of his passes for 400-plus yards and a couple of touchdowns and barely lost the game. And the Tulsa Golden Hurricanes ended up not winning, but he was the same guy. Like, the consistency of his approach is the thing that I love about him. The thing that surprised me, I would say, is actually how conservative he can be, because I actually knew about Dane when they signed him because I saw a stat from Pro Football Focus that said he had the, I believe, second most passing yards in the air in a season since they started tracking things back in like 2010 or so. And so I'm thinking, oh, okay, he's a big air, long shot, deep ball kind of guy. And he kind of is, but he's learning as he's become a pro that he knows when to take the shots and when to play it safe. And so when I break down and I do target charts and things of that nature online that people can find on my Twitter at @TSN_Marsh, I'm amazed by Dane because he actually takes way more checkdowns and way more underneath and way more crossing routes underneath 7 yards than I originally perceived, or at least that's what the eye test told me that he was doing. And then you break down the numbers and you're like, oh, he's as checkdowny, if you want to call it that, as like a Matt Nichols who gets accused of being a game manager, but he also takes more vertical shots than Matt Nichols. So it all kind of evens out in the end, but that did surprise me.
Okay. So if you're the Edmonton Eskimos, because we always hear disrupt the quarterback. Well, you know, just get pressure. I don't know if it doesn't matter if the pressure comes from the, you know, up the middle or if it comes from the edges. If you get pressure, then you're going to have success. But because it's not just the quarterback, it's their whole offensive line. Is there a slight area of weakness the defense, if you're Edmonton, should be focusing on that offense of the Tiger Cats?
Yeah, I think the one weakness that needs to be kind of ironed out, and I still don't really even know what they're going to do for it, is what do the Tiger Cats do when it comes to the running back position? Because it could be Cameron Marshall. It could be Malik Irons if he's called in spot duty as a backup. Do they dress Malik Irons at all if they maybe want to dress Cameron Marshall and Tyrell Sutton? You're not going to dress three or four running backs. You're probably going to go with two. So do you put a national on there so you have ratio flexibility, or do you go with the two power backs? Who's most likely to be able to kind of massage the ratio? Is it a receiver where you address an extra one of them as a national? Is it a running back? So I think for the Ticats, deciding what their lineup is going to be is going to play into this big time. But depending on who Edmonton ends up having to face in the running back position, I think that's going to change the way that the pass protection works, and that's going to probably change how aggressive Philip Lawley is. Because I think if the Tiger Cats come out with a game plan where, I mean, let's be real about it, they've had essentially 20 days since they played a meaningful game, and I'm looking at it and I'm thinking to myself in my preparation for this game, if the Ticats play Nikola Kalinic, their fullback, as a tight end, and if they want to go with a big body running back like Tyrell Sutton, they bring in that formation and Lawley's going to be really, really blitz heavy, and so that's probably going to work for them. But then you've got Dane Evans getting to play action off of a heavy formation and looking down the field to Brandon Banks, Braylon Addison, and Luke Tasker. I mean, that's kind of plays into the Tiger Cats' hands, I would think, at that point in the ball game, because you don't have a choice if you're the defensive coordinator for the Eskimos, Philip Lawley, other than to load the box and to get after them a little bit. So that running back spot, I think you got to attack that person, whoever it is, in pass protection. Probably got to bring some blitzes. Probably got to force the ball into Dane Evans' hands. But if you do that, and you leave Speedy B alone in the middle of a defense, he's going to make you pay for it. And I think that's a concern. But at the same time, that's kind of what's happened in a 15-win season for the Ticats, is they've got so many strengths and they've got so much variety in their offense that it's kind of pick your poison at this point.
Marshall Ferguson joins us, play-by-play voice of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, also host on TSN 1050. So let's say you're the defense trying to scheme against Trevor Harris and the Eskimos offense. I haven't seen a quarterback have a game like that in quite some time. Had three incompletions, and the first one, Ellenson, probably should have been caught. So, you know, another one was a deflection that led to an interception. Like, that's almost as perfect of a game as a quarterback can play. But just even the offense, he rarely got touched. There wasn't a lot of pressure, you know, and it wasn't like they were running the ball a ton either, Marshall. I know that Hamilton's D-line is better than Montreal's. At least they've had more consistent and pressure all season long, but how do you disrupt a guy that gets the ball away that quickly?
Here's the thing, and I get paid the big bucks in Hamilton to give you all this fancy analysis and breakdown quarterback stuff. I was sitting in the stands in Montreal watching that game for Trevor Harris last week. Here's my very, very complicated analysis. He's stupid good. That's about as far as I can go with it. No, I when I look at him, the thing that I think is amazing, and this is something that I've really come to appreciate about Jason Moss, and it's why I thought the Jason Moss conversation of should they fire him is just completely ridiculous, because he's a perfect match with Trevor Harris. Think about it. Jason Moss played with Ricky Ray. He's been around Ricky Ray, coached Ricky Ray, coached Trevor Harris when he was in Toronto, then moves on to Ottawa, brings in Trevor Harris, moves into Edmonton, brings in Trevor. Like, the ability to be able to have this kind of like a decade of a manipulation of the old Ricky Ray safe and smart style has turned into this monster where he hasn't, in his last two games against the East, in last year's Eastern Final or this year's Eastern Semifinal, even attempted a pass that's gone beyond 25 yards in the air. He doesn't even care about throwing deep. He's not even trying to throw deep, and it's still unstoppable. That tells you how effective and efficient they are. The thing that I love that they do, and when you talk about game planning against it, trying to get there, I've talked to Jagera Davis, I've talked to Ted LaRon, I've talked to Simone Lawrence, I've talked to all these guys. I say, what do you do if you can't get there in 2 seconds? They're like, well, you get your hands up. Okay, well, if you don't get your hands on the football, then what happens? They say, well, you got to rally to tackle. But the guys in the defense for the Tiger Cats have told me there's a lot of plays, and I know this from watching the game film and being there in person as well, watching up high in the sky in the stands. There's a lot of plays that Jason Moss calls that cannot be stopped. And I literally mean they cannot be stopped. Like in the CFL, if you complete a pass behind the line of scrimmage, you're allowed to have your receivers block downfield before the pass is actually completed because it's technically a run. Mm-hmm. And so they'll run Calvin McCarty across the line of scrimmage. They'll play action to the wide side of the field. Then Trevor Harris will flip his hips back to the left into the boundary, throw a ball to Calvin McCarty in the flats. And oh, by the way, you're now asking a free safety because he's the only person who's unblocked and you're already engaged blocking to run 35 yards downhill and make a tackle. Well, by the time he gets there, it's an automatic gain of 8. Like, the design of that offense and using the skill set of Trevor Harris to know where to go with the football and to be accurate with it, the little things like hitting guys on the right shoulder, hitting them so that they can turn easily and get away from defenders because he's leading them away from the pressure or away from coverage. That's the reason why for Hamilton, I'm like, good luck, because he's going to move the ball. He's going to score points. He's going to get first downs. He's going to chew up yardage and the clock. It's really, to me, in this game in the Eastern Final, about whether or not Dane Evans is able to put up points to play shot for shot with him. I think this is a high-scoring game. I really do, because Trevor's going to score, and I really do think that Hamilton has the ability to score a bunch of points as well. I'd set the over-under in it at, like, somewhere in the maybe, like, 60s at this point. Like, I really think it's like a – I think it's like a 38-35 kind of ball game, the way that I see these two offenses playing right now.
Marshall Ferguson joins us. Marshall, the Alouettes offense wasn't on the field a whole bunch, but they still put up a fair amount of points. And, you know, you look, I think there's better weapons overall in the receiving core of Hamilton. Banks has had an unreal year, of course, is up for the MOP and, you know, probably should win it in my books. So how do you defend him? Right, like, because he can. You talked earlier about those, you know, complete the pass behind the line of scrimmage. Banks is one of those players. You get the ball in his hands, he can make guys miss. We've seen it on special teams a ton, but he's really morphed into a better receiver than I thought he would be after watching him for the first 3 or 4 years. Has he improved his route running? What has he done to become such an effective receiver?
He was given an opportunity. That's the crazy thing. I've learned so much about the Brandon Banks experience that has taught me how to view football at large. I've stopped typecasting people. I have stopped assuming that guy's a career returner. When people get given the opportunity to do great things, a lot of the time they do great things. And that's something that I think I learned from June Jones as well. Just like June is such a great kind of philosopher in the game of football, and he's been around for so long. I had some great conversations with him just off of microphone or on the road or at a dinner and things of that nature where you get a chance to sit down and learn from him. And he basically just said, like, Brandon's a good football player. I don't know why people decided he was a returner. I don't know why Kent Austin decided he was a returner. They should have used him for years in that spot. But he said, I'm thankful they didn't because he's fresh. Like, he's not banged up. He doesn't have the wear and tear of years and years and years of being just a receiver. So if you're defending Brandon Banks, the thing I think that you have to be able to do is be physical with him inside the five-yard window. You can get up on him. You can press. You can try and run with him. But the thing is, Brandon is so untraditional as a receiver. I think this is kind of like a sneaky under-the-radar fact about him. Because he doesn't have those years of ingrained, okay, this person comes up and press, I need to jab to the outside and then run a slant underneath. Brandon doesn't really follow the rules of normal receivers. Like Greg Ellingson trying to get off of press coverage is completely different than Brandon Banks trying to get off of it. Brandon Banks just tries to get there the fastest way possible. There was actually a route against Edmonton at home, I think it was week 17 this year, that I sent out a video clip of because he was running a corner route, but as he released and he was the inside receiver to the wide side, Don Unamba, the Sam linebacker for the Eskimos, just flew out underneath him and basically got in his way. Speedy basically spun in the middle of the field and then just turned up field and ran as fast as he could to the corner. If you were to draw up that route on a piece of paper and show it to an offensive coordinator, they'd be like, yeah, cut that kid. He has no clue what he's doing. He's not right for this offense. We need to find somebody else that knows how to do that properly. But he's always open. That's the thing. Like, he plays with so much reckless abandon and speed that you can throw different types of coverages at him. You can bump him, run him. You can try and double over the top. But if you do that, you're taking away a body from the middle of the field. Well, now Luke Tasker's going to have a field day if Dane Evans knows what he's seeing and he gets that pre-snap read. Braylon Addison just as likely to go over the top as well. I mean, there's this multiplicity in the offense where a lot of the times I've learned from watching the film of the Ticats this year, they'll lean on Brandon Banks. He's got 35.7% of their pass targets this year. That's the most for any player as a receiver in the league for their offense when they're playing. But at the same time, they'll play off of him. They'll motion him around. They'll fake end arounds to him, reverses, things of that nature. Go play action to him on jet sweep, and that opens up everybody else. So Tommy Condell, the offensive coordinator for the Ticats, has done a real nice job of using those tendencies, sometimes leaning on them, and sometimes showing like he's leaning on them and then going away from it and using it to create other opportunities.
Marshall, quickly, if Fajardo can't play, can the Riders win?
No. Absolutely not. Isaac Harker is not ready to step into that moment, and I don't think William Powell is ready to have 45 carries in a ball game, even if that's what it comes down to. Kolaros is good enough to get the job done, and Kolaros versus the Hamilton Tiger Cats for a Grey Cup is spicy.
It'd be interesting because he goes against Saskatchewan in the West Final and then could technically take on the Tiger Cats. The Eskimos, of course, trying to do what no team's ever done, and that's make it to the Grey Cup in the crossover. They've won in the first round. I think this is now three times in the East Semi, but have never been able to get it done. We look forward to the game, and I hope you're right. As a fan of offense, I'd love to see a shootout in Steeltown. Thanks for your time, Marshall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what we're in for coming up on Sunday. Thanks for having me.